did they figure that out?
Well, they looked at the guy's ear, and then they saw the
this ear must have been bizarre.
Well.
I mean, you were saying must real, because in order for me to notice something like that, weird. Yeah, he does have a weird ear shape. It's elfin.
Yeah, it's elfin. It's almost like inside out a little bit. Yeah.
Or maybe it's elven. I don't know. So.
Or, yeah, elven. It could be elven.
Welcome to Hey You Know It. My name is Jaquetta Sotmar, and I'm here with my co-host,
Katie Kazmir. Hey You Know It is a podcast that tells you how it is or how it should be.
You can listen to Hey You Know It on iTunes, a new episode every Monday.
And here they are, Jaquetta and Katie.
All right, let's get into it then. We have all different things. So this is a unsolved mystère.
Episode. Or mystère. Yes. Because there's so many things that we don't know what the hell happened.
Yep.
And we want to know.
We want to even, I can't even say we want to get to the bottom of these. We want to get like to the middle of these.
Yeah, because there is no getting there's to no the bottom of them. But like maybe this will, if we kind of revive them a little bit, somebody will have an idea and we can reopen a case.
Yeah, a cold case. So I want to start with the death of one of my favorite actresses, which is Natalie Wood.
Natalie Wood,
She's a huge Natalie Wood fan. She started acting a few weeks before her fifth birthday.
Wow.
And was a child star and captured the hearts and minds and wallets of America via Hollywood. But
listeners, if you don't know her, she was in West Side Story. She was Maria.
But my favorite thing is she was in Splendor in the Grass.
Splendor in the Grass, yes.
I love that movie. I think it's beautifully shot, well acted, and it's just such a great movie to show what it was like to be a woman at that time and the kind of choices that you had to make. And that society really was kind of conspiring to drive you insane, which is what actually ends up happening to her character.
Yeah.
So this is 36 years later. The investigation into Natalie Wood's drowning death. So this is a super cold case.
Yeah.
So she died on November 29th. 1981. I remember this.
I remember this too.
Even though I think I was in like first or second grade or something like that.
It was a big deal.
It was a big deal. She died while sailing off Catalina Island outside of Los Angeles. And it become like a Hollywood legend and also a big mystery. So she was 43 years old when she drowned or was killed. Mm. We don't know. She was sailing with her husband, Robert Wagner.
And they were a cute Hollywood couple. Yes. Everybody liked them. Everyone liked Robert Wagner.
And who else was there? Christopher Walken.
One Mr. Christopher Walken on the boat partying with these two.
They were co-stars in the movie Brainstorm. I didn't see that movie.
I didn't
see
it either.
And then the boat's captain, Dennis Davern. So it was Christopher Walken, Dennis Davern, Robert Wagner, and Natalie Wood.
Right.
And I remember at the time, I think there might have been rumors about her having drug and alcohol dependency issues. So at the time of her death, it was classified an accidental drowning. But then 36 years later, the case, which was reopened in 2011, was still kind of ongoing. Mm-hmm. So the L.A. County Sheriff told People Magazine in 2016 that they're going to keep looking into it until they come to some kind of conclusion about what happened. Robert Wagner was not a person of interest, and then he kind of fell under suspicion.
How could he not be a person of interest?
He was on the boat.
Yeah.
He was on the boat. Yeah. So basically, in Pieces of My Heart, his 2008 memoir, he wrote that after a night of drinking, he got into an argument with Christopher Walken over Natalie Wood's career. Really?
No.
Really?
He accused him of trying to sleep with her.
Exactly. Yeah. Over her career. I mean, why would he be arguing with Christopher Walken about
her career? Yeah. The career's in our pants.
Yes, exactly. It's a euphemism of some kind. Wagner wrote, "I picked up a wine bottle, slammed it onto the table, and broke it into pieces." So the conjecture was that they were having the argument. She was trying to get away, because she died in a dinghy. They found there was a dinghy floating nearby, that she got into the dinghy and tried to get away, which makes no sense.
Yeah.
I'm guessing that something happened. She either fell overboard and then tried to get to the dinghy and wasn't helped.
Because she couldn't swim.
Yeah. And she was also, I think, drunk as well.
Yeah.
Probably. So he wrote, "Did I blame myself? If I had been there, I could have done something. But I wasn't there. I didn't see her. The door was closed. I thought she was below deck. I didn't hear anything. But ultimately, a man is responsible for his loved one, and she was my loved one. Mm. So he's saying that they had an argument of some kind, or he got upset, and then he smashed the bottle, and then he went back to his cabin. And then she fell overboard on her own?
Yeah.
And wasn't able to be saved in time.
Yeah, that's right. And just recently, I think that the captain, the ship captain, started talking about it even more, saying, yeah, he heard them really fight that night.
Well, at the time of the murder, the ship's captain said he didn't say anything. Mm-hmm. And then he said later on, when they reopened the case, that he'd lied about what he said. But I didn't find any information about what the captain actually said. So this is still like a cold case. They don't know what happened. They don't know who did it, or if it was an accident, or mm-hmm. if it was foul play. And it's just still
out there. And the sister still wants to know.
Yeah, they're saying at this point it's an accidental death.
Yeah.
That's all they can say about it. But I was so sad. I loved Natalie Wood. I thought she seemed like the kind of person who, if you met her, she would be like cool about it.
Yeah. I think so. She was a class act.
Yeah, and she had a really nice style.
Yes.
As well.
Yeah, she was a legend.
She was cool. And she was young.
Yeah.
When she died. Yeah. Robert Wagner, huh? Weird. I like Robert Wagner too.
Yeah. Yeah, he had a show called Heart to Heart at the time.
And I loved it. He was
Stephanie Powers.
Yes, and he was the head of Heart Industries.
Yes.
And which owned everything.
They were multi-billionaires. Yes. And they still solved mysteries.
Yep. And they had a scruffy dog and an even scruffier butler.
Yeah.
Max?
Max was the butler.
I believe.
Stephanie Powers. Max!
Yes. And what I loved about the characters is...
Darling.
They always had little classy pistols with them somehow.
Yeah.
Like that wasn't... It's like the same era of Columbo. It's like everyone's got a piece.
Yeah.
Just in a drawer and in your clutch.
Yeah, but they had style. They really did have taste in class.
Yep. And I think at one point, too, they were doing like prosthetics. You know what I mean? Like they were like doing disguises and things like that. They were dashing.
Yes.
All right, so what do you have for an unsolved mystery?
I have the Dayat Love Pass incident.
Okay.
Okay, so this is in Russia. There's a mountain in Russia called Dead Mountain, and that's Dayat. That's how you say it, apparently.
Okay.
In Russian. A gang of 10 people attempted to scale it from the most dangerous route possible.
Ooh, I think I know about this a little bit.
Yeah, during the journey, one of the guys got sick and was left in a small village along the way. The other 9 continued forward, but very soon they realized they took a wrong turn with the rapidly worsening weather conditions.
And then there were 8.
Mm-hmm. They hunkered down on the slope of the mountain, and they weren't heard from ever since. So, 10 days after their disappearance, a massive search party was assembled, and they found their tent.
A bit late, 10 days.
Yeah.
I mean, I expect a faster, like, reconnaissance mission, but whatever.
It was filled with supplies, but it was abandoned, and it seemed that the campers cut through the tent from the inside in the dead of night and made a run randomly out of it.
I'm going to guess that something was coming in the front, and they dipped out the back?
I don't know either. The bodies were found only in undergarments and socks. One of them even tried to climb a tree.
Okay, so when you are freezing to death, you apparently take off all of your clothes. You become euphoric. You feel hot, and you take off all your clothes. That's why you sometimes find frozen dead bodies, mm-hmm. half, you know, naked.
Well,
I don't know about the tree business.
Yeah. So, but they cut their way out of the tent. They clawed their way out of the tent for some reason. The last 4 bodies were found much later, and they are what makes this strange. They were found.
What makes it strange?
They were found fully clothed, wearing the clothes of the other campers, and had fallen into a ravine.
Huh?
They had fractured skulls and other injuries. One of them was even missing a tongue, but what happened there?
What?
Yes.
Why were they wearing the other people's clothes?
Well, the thing was, and I read another article about it too, that there was, one of them had such massive trauma inside of the body, but there was no physical signs on the outside. So if they fell...
Yeah, you'd have bruises from the outside.
You didn't, but everything was all damaged on the inside. And the one had the tongue and eyes gouged out.
Huh?
And died from that.
That's bizarre.
Yeah.
What could cause that kind of internal trauma?
Yeah. That is the thing. It's like all of those people died at the same time from widely different things.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Huh.
And so nobody quite knows what happened.
And we probably never will know.
Yeah.
So this is something that I used to hear about when I was a little girl. I would hear a little bit about the Nation of Islam, which are black Muslims, right? Mm-hmm. It's a religion that started in the United States. And we always heard about the mysterious founder of this religion. So most people know about, so Louis Farrakhan is a part of this Nation of Islam, but there was another guy called Elijah Muhammad, who I heard about when I was a kid as well. But this is about the founder. His name is Wallace Fard, also known as W. Farad Muhammad, the Prophet, and he founded the first Temple of Islam, which evolved into the Nation of Islam. Completely different from Islam from the Middle East.
Right?
These are two different things. This is kind of like, I guess you could say that the Nation of Islam kind of is to Islam from the Middle East as Mormonism is to Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
So like Mormonism, Nation of Islam is an American religion founded in the United States and is contemporary.
The Nation of Islam is an American contemporary thing. And
yes.
Islam
like
is
Mormonism is an American contemporary
mm-hmm.
religion. So the information about him is only from 1930 to 1934.
Mm-hmm.
According to him, right, when he's talking about himself, although there's no documentation, he was born in Mecca to a wealthy family that had lineage to the Prophet Muhammad. But according to the FBI, he was born in 1891 in New Zealand. This is a black guy, light skin, but black, arrived in the United States in 1913 and settled in Portland, Oregon, and then was arrested in California 5 years later for possession of alcohol. This is during Prohibition.
Mm-hmm.
And then again in 1926, because apparently he was slinging drugs.
Mm-hmm.
After he spent some time in San Quentin prison, where we assume he came into contact with Islam as a religion. And then when he was released, he moved to Detroit, Michigan. So the stories I always heard about him growing up is that he came out of nowhere. He ends up in Detroit, right, in the 30s, and he starts selling, like from like a cart, umbrellas and silks and oils door to door.
What?
So he was going door to door, you know, like a peddler of some kind. And he worked in Detroit's African American community, which was called Paradise Valley. At some point, he began promoting a new religion, right? Mm-hmm. This is the Nation of Islam. And he told people that it would liberate African Americans spiritually, psychologically, and financially. He was anti-Christianity because he said Christianity was put out there by the white devil, white people,
mm-hmm.
and to exploit African Americans. It's the religion of slaves, this, that, and the other. And he told people once they joined his temple to change their slave name, their last name, to X.
Oh.
Right?
Okay.
So during this period, so this is the 30s. So people are very receptive at this point. It's after the Depression to prosperity, religions, to things that will give people a way out, right?
Yeah.
Everybody was looking for something. So his teachings became very popular in some members of the African American community, and he was able to open up a temple of Islam, and he had a organization called the Fruit of Islam and a Muslim girls training core class and a University of Islam, which were just elementary, middle school, and high school. And then in 1934, disappears.
What?
No one's ever heard from him again.
No.
And then his disciples, Elijah Poole and Elijah Muhammad, are the people who now are known as kind of like founding or, you know, being the forefathers of like the Temple of Islam and the Nation of Islam. So, yeah, I used to hear about this when I was a kid. Nobody knows where this guy came from and no one knows what happened to him. He just disappeared. But I remember hearing about a guy selling scarves and oils and things like that from like older people and then poof. So no one I grew up with was a member of the Nation of Islam because it didn't get to where I'm from.
Right.
And also we're country people. That's mostly African Americans, pretty much all the African Americans I knew grew up were just Christian.
Yeah,
different denominations, but no one had really any contact with any other religions.
Yeah.
So this was just kind of like a thing that was out there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's a mystery. No one knows where he came from.
And he's gone.
Wow. I didn't know that. So the FBI said he came from New Zealand. That's weird.
What?
Yeah. I don't know how he got to the United States or what the situation was.
So interesting.
Yeah.
Oh,
so,
gosh.
I mean, I this could be one of these things where it says here he existed, but who knows? I mean, at the beginning of a lot of religions, you know, there are people who,
right,
whose origin stories are kind of, you know, amorphous.
Oh, yeah, and mysterious.
And mysterious. So, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Really interesting.
That is interesting. Because I guess you have to have something kind of with another otherworldly quality.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to listen to, like, you know.
But the fact that he didn't disappear.
This guy from Bayonne.
Yeah. Then he disappeared.
He was a C student. Nice kid.
Yeah.
Anyway.
All right, what do you have?
This is Summer Wind.
Okay. Summer Wind.
Yes. There's a mansion in Wisconsin named Summer Wind.
Really? That's strange.
Yeah. It was built in the 1920s, and whoever lived there had a bad experience.
What?
When the first owner lived there with his wife, he heard complaints from his maids that the place was haunted, which he shrugged off as woman talk. Until one day.
Okay, why would they make... They can't go anywhere else. They're just trying to let the dude know the place is haunted.
Yeah.
They're not trying to get out of the ironing or whatever.
Woman talk. But it's... A woman is speaking, so it's like, you're ridiculous until you prove yourself.
Yeah. What are they talking about? Spirits?
Yeah. Until one day, the basement door started shaking and he saw a ghostly apparition of a man. He fired 2 shots at it and fled with his wife. After remaining vacant for 40 years, new owners moved in and almost immediately saw a strange occurrence, from flickering shadows.
They get their pieces out.
To hearing soft voices when they entered a room. There's also a ghost of a woman who appeared occasionally in the dining room. Later they went and they found the remnants of a little girl. And when they went to double check, the body was gone.
I'm sorry, like a foot?
Guess, I don't know.
Remnants? Yeah. It's just the worst way to describe. They mean a corpse? Yeah.
Apparently.
Remnants.
Later they hired some construction workers to renovate the house, but the workers complained about lost tools and how the rooms changed sizes every time they measured them.
Sounds like somebody got into the liquor.
it's abandoned. And
really?
Yeah.
To this day?
And lightning struck it, so it's only a little bit of the house left.
It's just the front porch.
Yeah.
And a remnant.
So nobody knows.
Oh, I like that.
They got the 4 R's.
The 4 R's. Rehearse, record, rental, repair.
To all that was 40th Street. Hashtag Bumpline NYC.
I couldn't believe this. I love a heist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't condone theft.
No.
But when it's like this, I feel like it's okay. Mm-hmm. So this happened in 2003, and I kind of remember the Antwerp Diamond Center heist.
Oh,
I remember hearing about that.
Yeah, yeah.
So basically, there's a diamond district in Antwerp, Belgium, and it handles the majority of all the diamond transactions in the world. I am not into diamonds. I don't see the point. It's a shiny rock, and it seems like there's been a lot of, sugar cane and chocolate and other things. It's you know, it's been the demise of a lot of cultures.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I'll put it that way. But whatever. So this place, obviously, because it's the Diamond District, is got all kinds of security around it. Like, it's got these pillars in front of it. There's security guards everywhere. There's cameras
mm-hmm.
everywhere. But, of course, nothing is impenetrable.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if a person wants to get into something and take something out of it, they're going to do it. There's
mm-hmm.
nothing you can do about it. So this heist was perpetrated by a gentleman called Leonardo Notar Bartola, an Italian jewelry designer, merchant, and criminal.
Wow.
So this guy goes to Belgium and rents an office in the Diamond Center, posing as a legitimate businessman.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently, if they had just looked into his background, they would have seen that he was, you know, a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
But no one did. They took him at his word. And this is like just one of a couple of things that helped them get their heist together. So while he was working, or pretending to
mm-hmm.
work in the area, he was casing the joint. So he took notes about employee schedules, the names of the locks, then safes, building layout. He even somehow got his hands on the blueprints. And he would take the information back to Italy and share it with his heist
mm-hmm.
men. I don't know what you call them, with his group. And they called themselves the School of Turin. So this is their heist group. So he did this for 2 years. So over the course of 2 years, it was videos, like copious notes, all kinds of information he was taking back
mm-hmm,
to the School
mm-hmm.
of Turin. So this was like a long-term plan for this heist. 2003, February 15th, they enter the Diamond Center using a remote control that they made to detect the frequency to hone in on the garage opener's code. So they get in that way. The garage is facing the outside of the district, so they picked an area that didn't have a lot of surveillance. Although you think that would be obvious, right? Like a garage door would be a place that you would kind of expect. Yeah.
No.
So they get the code, right? They get into the basement vault, and there are 200 safety deposit boxes used in there for all the merchants. And there's a foot thick steel door with a key lock, a combination, and a magnetic arm. So a couple days before the heist, one of the school of Torin, mm-hmm. one of the pupils of the school of Torin, poses as a workman and goes in and disables mm-hmm. the alarm. Because Notar Bartola had been working there, he knew where the key was, so he was able to get the key, but he didn't know the combination of the vault. But luckily, whoever had been there, because this is on a weekend, mm-hmm. whoever had closed it on Friday forgot to scramble mm-hmm. it.
Oh, okay.
So it was already...
It's already
there.
Yeah.
So they get inside the vault. They disable the light, the motion, and the heat sensors using hairspray, electrical tape, and a block of styrofoam and a broom handle. So just old school.
Wow, this is like MacGyver.
Yeah, these guys are pros.
Yeah.
So there was also a seismic detector. So if they tried to drill, that would have set it off. But they had someone make them some kind of specialized tool that they could just pry open the safety deposit mm-hmm. boxes without drilling. Who is putting this stuff together?
I don't know.
It makes no sense. So you couldn't drill into it, but you could just flick it open
yeah.
with something that somebody made. Right? So they get in there. They grabbed cash, diamonds, and gold bars, uh-huh. and they left behind anything that was distinctive, like any jewelry that someone could have recognized, because you can't fence that kind of stuff anyway. And they left behind, you know, rubies.
You know.
Emeralds, the small stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
They left that behind. And they stole between 100 and 400 million euros, so about $500 million. It was the biggest heist. So they got caught. So they also, on the way out, they stole the security tapes.
Oh, they did.
As well. They exited through the garage with their bags and loot, and they had apparently whatever they did, they had a little party, mm-hmm. and then they dumped their trash in a forest. Unfortunately for them, about a day and a half later, someone who was a caretaker in that forest found this stuff, and they took DNA samples from champagne bottles and other things that were in there, and they were caught. So they identified four of the thieves, including the Notar Bartola guy. They all went to jail. They're all out now, but they never got the other guys, and they recovered nothing.
Wow.
They recovered none of the loot. So that's the mystery is where are the diamonds?
Where are the diamonds?
And it's so interesting because I feel like diamonds are one of those things that some of the most unscrupulous people in the world
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
love to deal with diamonds.
Because it's so easy to fake everybody out.
But also, too, you can use them to fund your wars.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can use them for your trafficking, for your drugs, whatever. All the horrible things that you shouldn't be doing. You could probably pay for all of those things with diamonds very easily.
Yeah, that's
because of the kind of people you're dealing with.
Right, and it's not traceable, the whole thing. It's just like...
I've never understood why diamonds have any value at all. To me, they just seem absolutely pointless. Unless it's like an industrial diamond or something like that.
Well, I think maybe they had value because you could sharpen things on them.
That's not even an industrial diamond.
Yeah, yeah.
But like, you know, a diamond, like the kind of diamonds that these guys stole, they were just for jewelry.
Yeah.
There's only one thing you can do with them is either make jewelry or trade them for something of value. But in my mind, really, it's, you know, it's just some shiny rocks.
Yeah, so they started the whole thing, like, use them for the engagement rings, so they had some value to it.
Yeah, so that would be something.
So it would be something, yeah. Right?
But if somebody gave me a diamond, I would immediately sell it.
Yeah.
Because what am I going to do with it? I can't eat it.
Yeah, exactly.
I can only exchange it for something else of value. It has no value in my mind. I know a lot of people are really into them.
My earrings looked like diamonds. $4.
Well, I wouldn't be able to tell the difference between a paste...
I know.
Glass and an actual diamond.
That's what I say.
You know, so who cares? But anyway,
these could be diamonds for all I know. Yeah. I'm paying $4.
They're probably not for $4. Had you said $4.50, maybe. But these diamonds are gone.
Mm.
And the loot is gone. Those guys probably could not. I mean, $500 million, I think that's worth sitting in jail.
Yeah.
If you're a criminal.
Yeah.
No?
I don't know. I mean, if they could... if they picked out all of those weaknesses and were able to get that far,
Yeah.
And then drink some champagne.
And the champagne got them.
Champagne got them in the end, which is too bad. They had it all planned out.
I know. They should have burnt that stuff. Yeah. And never, instead of just throwing it in the woods.
Who would have thought somebody in the woods would get it and be like, let's take DNA samples off it.
Well, they found not inside the bag, it wasn't just champagne. There were gems and things in there too, and money. So it was kind of like a clue.
Yeah.
It wasn't just they found the empties. It's like they also found, like...
Like, it was in my mind, I had scattered bottles all over the site. And they're like, this champagne looks...
It's like a Columbo.
Yeah. I know there's something about it.
No, there were also, like, emeralds and money.
Yeah.
And things from the heist in there.
That's hilarious.
All right, what do you have?
Okay. I have the Tamin Shud case.
Okay.
So Tamin Shud, it means finished in Persian.
All right. Cool.
And so, just know that.
Okay.
Tuck that into the...
The finished case.
Yes. So, in Adelaide, Australia, a man was found washed up on the beach with the final pages of a Persian poem that had those words written on it. So
really?
A dead man washed up with just this paper that said, Tamin Shud, which means finished.
That sounds like a hit.
All we know about him is that he carried a pack of cigarettes, was well-dressed, appeared to be in top physical condition, had no ID on him. His dental records didn't match any other person living in Australia.
Okay.
The autopsy made it clear he most probably died from poisoning. And it created a media frenzy, and every possible lead was pursued. After searching through army records, they found a man who supposedly had a drink with a mystery man. And he said that the man had a military pension card, and his name was Solomonson.
Okay. Sure it was.
Solomonson and Steinenbaum.
Yeah. Right. Burger.
I don't know. That kind of seems fake, but it was also during the Cold War. And they found his suitcase, too, but that didn't explain much. When they found the whole version of the Persian book, the same one with the page was torn from, it had the name of a woman in it who they tracked down. She remained anonymous, but she died in 2007. But when she saw the picture of the Tamin Shud guy, she looked so horrified as if she recognized him but refused to give out any information.
I wonder what that was about.
So the last piece of this puzzle is that the Persian book itself had some code scribbled on its back, which still hasn't been solved. Okay. So people think, like, he was probably a spy who got killed off.
Yeah, that sounds like a spy.
Yeah.
Because he was well-dressed. Although, I mean, it's a bit Hollywood, but...
One last interesting tidbit. He had a unique and extremely rare ear shape.
Huh?
And the book
the
woman...
What the hell does that mean?
His ear was shaped in
this
weird way.
Was it like a foot
way.
Or something?
Yeah.
Like...
But this rare ear shape, it was just something. Okay. And the book woman had a son with the same exact ear shape. So it was probably the love child of this guy. And she knows all what the story is. And she didn't tell anyone, and she died.
Wow.
It's a mystery. It's unsolved. Thanks,
An
lady.
An ear shape? How did they figure that out?
Well, they looked at the guy's ear, and then they saw the son.
I mean, if it was
like,
this ear must have been bizarre.
Well.
I mean, you were saying it must really, because
this is
in order for me to notice something like that. Oh, that is weird.
Yeah.
He does have a weird ear shape. It's elfin.
Yeah, it's elfin. It's almost like inside out a little bit. Yeah.
Or maybe it's elven. I don't know. So.
Or, yeah, elven.
It could be elven.
Not elfin.
So, obviously, you know, Jack the Ripper.
We all heard about him.
Infamous murder, Jack the Ripper, killed at least 5 London female prostitutes in 1888, never captured, and his identity is a famous unsolved mystery. And it's one of those things, like, Jack the Ripper, for me, like the Titanic, people never tire of these stories.
This guy.
I mean, it's not a mystery, Titanic. But the mystery for me is why people still fucking going on about it.
Yeah,
but
Jack,
like,
the Ripper is something that really caught people's imagination.
And
always.
I think it's not that, I mean, it's 1888, so these are really dark times. In London. It's the East End. It's like the worst part of London. Notorious for gangs, crime, drugs, prostitution, just all kinds of this human degradation. I always think things like this, it could be any number of people. Especially people don't respect prostitutes now. They definitely didn't respect them then. And didn't really care what happened to them.
Yeah.
So this guy was operating, you know, pretty much openly. Mm-hmm. So from August 7th to September 10th in 1888, Jack the Ripper, quote unquote, terrorized Whitechapel District in London's East End, killing at least 5 prostitutes. And what was unusual about it was he was mutilated the bodies. Right. And also the way in which he mutilated the bodies seemed to indicate that he had medical training.
Oh.
So that was creepy about it. This guy wasn't just cutting people up. Mm-hmm. He was like surgically, you know.
Mutilating. Was he taking out the body parts?
I don't think he took anything. He didn't take a trophy.
But he would remove them from the body.
He removed them and he cut them up in ways that it wasn't. He didn't just hack. Yeah. It's like he separated things from other things. So they called him Jack the Ripper because they didn't know what the dude's name was, right? And it kind of became like something that was sensationalized in the press. All the prostitutes were killed within a mile of each other. There was no evidence whatsoever. There was some guy who claimed to be a butcher at the time, wrote in to the press and said, it's me, but they don't think it was him. Mm-hmm. You know, just someone trying to get... either trying to get a rise out of it or someone who wants their name to be known. Adding to the mystery is the fact that several letters were sent by the killer to the London Metropolitan Police Service, Scotland Yard, taunting them about not being able to find out who the actual murderer is. So some people said that he was a famous Victorian painter called Walter Sickert. Some said that he was a Polish migrant. I don't know where they got that from.
Polish migrant.
Yeah.
Don't blame it on.
Someone said maybe it was the grandson of Queen Victoria. So they had no idea.
That's like just across the board. Yeah, everything that they could think of.
It could be any of those people. But since 1888, there have been more than 100 named suspects to who Jack the Ripper was. So basically, you know, as I said, during this time is, you know, if you were a lady of the evening or, you know, where you were working from houses of ill repute or whatever other kind of pseudonyms they want to give it, it wasn't unusual for you to have violence visited upon you. But this was particularly brutal.
Yeah.
Right. Because even though prostitutes were murdered and beaten, dismembered
in this kind of precise way. And it indicated the person had some kind of education or training behind them. So it's like, who amongst us is this person?
Yeah. And there were also gangs that were preying upon prostitutes in addition to John. So it's very difficult for them to figure out who was doing what, right? Pretty much everybody was a suspect. But as I said, he stood out because of his butchery. And they said not only was he mutilating the women, he humiliated them. So the way that they were left was, you know, in a way that would be, humiliating to these women. So still we have no idea who it is. There's still someone investigating it.
Really?
As late as 2011.
Wow.
They're still looking into it and they have information about who the informants were at the time, but they're still keeping their names secret.
Really?
Because that's just what they do. So if you're a confidential informant, you're a confidential informant.
For life.
And that's it.
And
for
death.
Forever.
Yeah.
Forever and ever and ever. So in 2014, Russell Edwards, an author and amateur sleuth, claimed that he had proven the identity of Jack the Ripper using DNA obtained from a shawl belonging to one of the victims. The reports have yet to be verified, but Edwards asserts that they point to this random Polish immigrant, Aaron Kaminski. And who was one of the prime suspects. So they're saying that this guy's DNA was on a shawl, and maybe it was him. But, I mean, this was a prostitute in a very busy city. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming, not to be rude, but there's going to be quite a bit of DNA.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I would imagine.
Around.
Yes.
And you also don't know if this poor Aaron Kaminski wasn't the kind of guy who just came along and saw someone was killed, bent down, to be like, what's going on? And then was like, shit, I've touched a murder scene.
Yeah, right.
Let me get out of here. You know? Like you always see, it's like they come into a room and there's a guy covered with blood holding a knife. And he's like, it wasn't me. I just found this.
Yeah, right.
Sure you did.
Yeah.
Sure you did, Aaron.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
So, unsolved mystery of Jack the Ripper. People were fascinated by it.
Yeah. I remember even as a kid, that was like another thing that was big, like Bigfoot, UFOs.
Yes.
Jack the Ripper. Sharks.
Yeah. And sharks. All right, what do you have?
Okay, I have Roanoke Colony.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
During the late 16th century, the British were desperately trying to gain a foothold in the Americas, competing with the French and Spanish, right? Mm-hmm. But this colony...
That's a nice way to put it.
Yes. It but the colony had bad luck from the very beginning. So Sir Walter Raleigh sent an expedition to Roanoke Island, which is now a part of North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
The ships got lost on the way. Then they lost much of their food. And then when they reached, they blamed a local native for stealing a silver cup.
Huh?
And, yeah, a local, and so they burnt the native village to the ground.
That's why they said they burnt it to the ground? They came here to commit genocide. Yeah, why are they blaming on a cup theft?
Then when the expedition leader needed to go back to England and get more supplies, most of the colonists abandoned the colony at the first opportunity. All right. So then there's the next expedition. Raleigh, not easily deterred, sent a much larger expedition to join up with the remnants of Roanoke.
Mm-hmm.
And they...
Having realized that another cup might be stolen, and there were even more Native Americans to kill.
When they arrived, all they found was an empty colony and a skeleton. Okay, so...
I'm sorry, a skeleton?
Yeah.
This is a sign.
Yeah, yeah.
This is clearly to me that the local people were like, what
right.
will they understand?
Because as they say here, it turns out when you sack and loot a village, natives don't like it.
Yeah, and they're like, what will these people understand? You know what? We'll put up a skeleton. That can't be a welcoming...
Right. So this group, now fearing for their lives, they sent now expedition leader John White... back to England to get more soldiers to help defend the colony.
Mm-hmm.
He left his granddaughter Virginia Dare there. She was the first British born on American soil, and he went home. He couldn't return for another 3 years due to this war with the Spanish. The Spanish Armada was there. When he finally made it back, the entire colony was abandoned, including his granddaughter, with no sign of struggle. It seemed as if everyone just packed up and left in an orderly fashion. The only clue left was a carving on a tree saying Croatan.
What does that mean?
C-R-O-A-T-A-N. Before White left, he told the colonists to draw a cross if they were forced to leave by force.
Okay. When were they going to do that?
But there was no cross anywhere. So one of the three things happened. Either they all moved to a new place...
And just didn't say anything?
And got captured. Or they tried to return to England,
mm-hmm.
and they sank. Or they just all died very shortly after White left. And the last one seems likely because Virginia's mother, Eleanor, wrote these dare stones, which people think are fake, but basically list on stones about where and when every one of the colonists died.
He was gone for 3 years.
Anything
could
have happened. But the
you
whole
know?
Place was gone. So it's just like, well, if you're going to be like...
But they left, the structures were there.
Yeah, the structures were there. The entire colony was gone. But nobody knew. It wasn't even like anyone could be like, you know, we all moved. Or, yeah, we heard the story of them being taken by the Native Americans or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It could have... Or they all left. Somebody would have known if a big group of people left.
Yeah.
Altogether.
I'm guessing it was just the Native Americans just finishing that one up.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, they tried to tell them the first time.
Yeah. Exactly. And then Croton.
Yeah.
That's it.
I don't know what that means.
I don't know either. Nobody
maybe knows. It's maybe someone started to write something else.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, right. and didn't get very far.
Right.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember hearing stories about that as a kid. And they're trying to, you know, I guess draw up some support for the colonists. And we were like,
sorry.
Yeah, too bad. Who knows? So I have some here, some unexplained shipping incidents.
Okay. Shipping incidents.
Yeah. I always find these fascinating because it's kind of like this idea, like Titanic once again, that if you build a really large ship,
mm-hmm.
everything's going to be okay. But you've seen how big the ocean is.
Yeah.
No matter how large a ship you build, it's still tiny.
Compared to what the ocean is. Yes.
Compared
oh,
to
absolutely.
What the ocean is like. So here's an interesting one. It's just the MV Joyita. It's a merchant vessel mysteriously disappeared in the South Pacific in 1955. It was patrolling around Hawaii, the Big Island, until the end of World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And then in October 3rd, it left Samoa, bound for the Tokelau Islands, which are 270 miles away. Apparently, the departure was delayed because the port engine clutch failed, and so it left on one engine.
Mm-hmm.
What?
When?
Exactly.
Okay.
16 crew, 9 passengers. And then 5 weeks later, they found that it was partially submerged. No trace of passengers or crew. And 4 tons of cargo missing. Mm-hmm. Nobody knows what happened.
Wow.
Yeah. Creepy. That's scary.
I'll tell you what. You want to hear a real life unsolved mystery?
Yeah.
Well, I put together a bunch of these mysteries and emailed them to myself.
Okay.
And half of them are distorted.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. It's like they're...
What happened? Oh, that looks creepy.
Yeah. But half of my stuff, they sent okay. But suddenly now when I look at them...
It's a mystery. What happened?
It's a mystery. And I guess I should... There are mysteries not to be spoken of. But I have some other ones, too.
Okay.
All right. All right. This is a little one here. This is the Los Lunas Decalogue Stone.
Okay.
Okay. This is an artifact. It was found in Los Lunas, New Mexico. And the stone itself is around 2,000 years old.
Surely this stone must be older than that. It's a stone.
The thing is that it has the Ten Commandments written on it.
Okay.
And most evidence points to the fact that this happened way before the arrival of Columbus. And it's written in an ancient phonetic script that refers to Yahweh. And archaeologists say it's a hoax, but it doesn't explain what a Jewish relic was doing in America 2,000 years ago. So it's like kind of a weird...
So it's two stones that apparently have the Ten Commandments on it.
Yeah, but they know it's a hoax, but it's still, it's like a weird one. It's like, why were they...
Who put that on there? And why?
Yeah. Bizarre. In New Mexico.
That's weird.
Yeah.
So the stone, the carving of the stone, they're saying, dates to 2,000 years
yeah.
ago? I don't know. I just keep thinking of that scene in Mel Brooks'
yeah.
History of the World, yeah. where he's like...
10 commandments.
Oh, geez. All right, I have another short one. This is about the Jenny. And I think some films have been made about this. So it was a schooner, a British schooner, was frozen in an ice barrier in the Drake Passage in 1823. They discovered it years later. The crew was on board, preserved by the Antarctic cold, and the crew of the whaler discovered the last entry in the captain's log. Said May 4th, 1823, no food for 71 days. I am the only one left alive. I know.
Ooh.
I know.
That's really...
Yeah. That stuff is so creepy to me.
That's scary.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's
there's
it.
There's no...
I'm the last one.
I'm kind of scared.
Left. Yeah, there are a lot of these for ships that just disappear.
Yeah, well, yeah.
And you never find out what happens. And I always think, is there no way to, like, you know, if you don't hear from me,
yeah,
you know, for a couple days, like, I don't know, a pigeon or something? Because there was really nothing you could do.
Yeah.
And why didn't they take more food?
Yeah, right?
Like, what?
It's like, yeah, you'd think that you would plan for, like, things to go wrong. And they don't.
Yeah, I don't understand why they wouldn't take more food with them, or like what is the emergency, the plan for that kind of thing, if you get trapped? Because eventually it's going to, the ice will melt. I mean, if you were able to sail in, at some point you should be able to sail back out.
Right.
Don't you have enough food?
Like double food.
Yeah.
For there and back plus
them. Who knows?
Did you hear the one, remember the elevator game?
No.
I think we talked about it on an episode. This is the story about Elsa Lam. This was from 2013. She was a young Asian woman found dead inside of a hotel's rooftop water tank.
Huh?
Yes. And I remember this in the news, and I was just like, oh, my God. She
quit. What happened?
Well, she... There is... No, she's like a college student.
Okay.
She's found dead. The surveillance video... was found of her the night before she disappeared, but it caused more confusion because she was seen walking into an elevator and hiding as if somebody was following her. And then she peers...
Hiding in the elevator?
Yeah, and then she peers out the door looking for some entity that never shows its face. And then it also shows her actually talking to somebody as if somebody was there and, like, moving her arms around erratically and, like, kind of...
Like she was having a conversation.
Yeah, with somebody that you can't see.
That's creepy.
And the way for her to get into that water tower
like
was...
how did she do it?
It was too heavy. There was no way she could get in without
So it's like a water tower, like, on top of a building?
Yes, yes, yeah, with a lid on it and everything. So she could not have gotten in there by herself. And then, but the thing is that there's no surveillance of anybody else around doing it. So it's, and then they see her talking to somebody that's not there.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, oh, maybe she was depressed and she was on medication, but there were no drugs in her body. There was no nothing.
And that's a very dramatic.
Yeah. And
but then, okay, aside from that, let's say she was having some kind of a mental health issue. That doesn't explain superhuman strength.
Yeah, and right. Even if, for more people to open it up, no, it takes a number of people to open it up.
Because it's not supposed to get open easily.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So then some people brought up the fact of maybe she was playing the elevator game, which is a game that it was, this is all, we talked about this a while ago, and it's a scary game where you get on the elevator and you follow, and you by yourself, and you're supposed to enter into another dimension. You follow a set of rules.
Mm-hmm.
And you follow a set of rules, and I can't remember all of them, but you the door is supposed to open up on a certain floor.
Okay.
And then if you see a woman standing there, you don't say anything, and you don't get out. But if you see a long hallway with a cross, you go towards it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but people are supposedly, they disappear after playing the game. So it's like one of these, like you enter into another dimension, and...
And you end up in a water tank.
Something happens. Yeah. So they thought that she was playing the elevator game, and
so this is happens. they have no idea how she got into
no idea, and there's no reason for her to be there. There's no explanation for the video of why she's acting the way she's acting, and there's just nothing that makes sense.
That to me is always one of the best parts of a good scary movie mm-hmm. involving ghosts or demons is that the person is reacting to what they see, but no one else can see it. And that's what I think is frightening.
Yeah.
This idea that you could be, like we were talking about before, like, did you see that? Did you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
And the other person doesn't. You are clearly experiencing something, and mm-hmm. you carry on as such. Mm-hmm. And in that state, you are able to do damage in a way that you could not mm-hmm. do before. Right? If you're trying to flee something that you think you see, which sounds like that's what she was doing.
And then there are some conspiracy theories where she was part of a government experiment.
To do what?
They were testing different drugs on her.
Why
and then,
her?
Or she found out something about this experiment. And then,
but surely there's easier ways to kill someone and draw less attention to your weird experiment.
But even weirder, they found documents, like government documents, of an experiment or something, and its code name is Elsa Lam, which is her name.
What?
Yeah. So there is some kind of link to something that nobody's talking. They can't figure it out. It's like...
That's creepy.
Yeah.
Well, definitely a good way to end Unsolved Mysteries. Thank you for listening to Hey You Know It. Stay in touch with us during the week. Follow us on Twitter. Follow us on Tumblr. Go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star review. We'll read it on an upcoming show, regardless of content.
As always, we love your emails. Send us an email at heyyouknowit@gmail.com with your comments, questions, and segment ideas. Emails will also be read on upcoming shows.
Please tell your friends about us, because you know we don't advertise. And let them know we can be found on iTunes, at Stitcher.com, and at heyyouknowit.com. Thanks.